Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
And it's a very warm welcome I want to give to Chip Conrad to be with us today. We'll move on for knowing him a little better, who it is discovering him. He is a perpetual student of Dizzying Harry of Strength and Fluid Outlets, and as well, he's anchored in physical culture history, having studied with Jan and Terry Todd, Mel Sif and Tommy Kono, among many others. He's competed and coached nationally and internationally in multiple strength sports, but he won't let any of that get in the way of a good tumble, tree climb, or river dip. He is the founder of Body Tribe, and it's in its many incarnations, including actual gym, books, DVDs, and now a new series on YouTube called Body Tribe Anywhere, in which he travels the country, doing, between Alabama and Texas, and more, of course, doing groovy workouts in interesting locations, while sometimes interviewing important strength philosophers. He is co-founder of Mental Meets Heads, a workshop series around the US. He's currently training for an international mass wrestling competition at the Olympias, that's in December, but still can't seem to stop climbing trees and jumping rivers. Now, the two-day session, he will not tell you how to think, but will urge you to think. And we'll see now how we can't teach, learn, or pursue what we haven't defined, but we'll see right now how. Chip, the session is yours. Thank you. Take it away.
How do I follow that accent? That's such an amazing sounding accent. Hello, everyone. I'm currently in Austin, Texas. If you haven't heard yet, I've been traveling quite a bit. And so me and a razor have not met for a while. So I apologize for the scruff. But as someone mentioned, winter is coming. So I'm preparing for that, I guess. I can't grow a beard to save my life. It'll never look that good. So sorry. Anyway, let's talk about stuff. Let's talk about, I want to talk about strength because it's a word that we don't often define enough. I also want to talk about training for strength. And this doesn't just mean the stuff we do in the gym. And that's what we're going to go deep into, is how strength training is not at all what's being sold to us right now. So I want to start though with talking about training versus working out. Because that's what I do. I teach movement, I teach strength, and I train people and I train myself. And I kind of have a feeling that if you're here, you have a training regimen as well. And I would like to delve into that so we can talk about building your own philosophy of strength and philosophy of movement, and therefore train for that philosophy and create a training program based on that philosophy. So one thing I do want to mention quickly in the beginning here is how training and working out are not synonymous. Training is the process of building skills, which we'll go into quite a bit more in a little bit. Working out can just be sweating, moving and sweating and having no purpose at all. So what we're talking about specifically is working out with a purpose, which is what training is. Training consists of workouts, but not all workouts are training. And that's important. So let's talk about training for a second. But more importantly, we're going to talk about the why behind training. I'm going to start with a little story from a little cartoon called South Park. And if you've read my book, you know this story. There was something in South Park. I know it's a high level, important conceptual art, South Park. There were these creatures called the Underpants Gnomes. And the Underpants Gnomes stole underpants. They stole the children's underpants. And the children were curious as to why they stole the underpants. So they followed the Underpants Gnomes to the Underpants Gnomes' home in this big tree and asked them, "Why are you stealing our underpants?" And the Underpants Gnomes pulled out a chart. And the chart said, step one, steal underpants. Step two. Step three, profit. And so the kids asked, well, what's step number two? And so they all looked around, they asked each other, what's step number two? And everybody shouted, step three, profit. And step number two is blank. The wise message from South Park being that often we just assume that the end is going to happen, that the byproduct or the big goal is going to occur. And we treat our training that way. We treat our workouts that way. In fact, what I call the fitness industrial complex sells this to us. Step one, workout. Step two, step three, a better you. And we never talk about what step two is. We just assume that because you're working out, because you're training, because you're doing something in a gym, in this appropriate environment that's been sold to you, that somehow you're going to be a better you. And so what today is talking about what step number two is. How do you take that process of working out, training, whatever, and make a better you from it? Because it's not an automatic process. I've been working with people and training people and doing this workout stuff for 25 years. I've had my own gym for almost 20 years. And I can tell you that just because you're working out, you don't automatically become a better you. In fact, it's almost a happy accident if it actually occurs. So today we're going to talk about creating your own movement philosophy. Fill in that step number two. That's our big goal. What is that step number two that takes our movement and our training and our strength and actually makes us a better person from it? Now, I'm going to start with a mentor of mine named Tommy Kono, who was mentioned in the intro. He's one of the people I've learned from. And if you ever get the chance to actually sit at the feet of masters, do it. Online conferences are great and books are great and DVDs are great, but what we're failing these days, what we're lacking these days is the chance to actually literally sit at the feet of a master and just ask them questions, learn from them, absorb and process. And Tommy Kono was that one of those mentors for me. I've had very lucky, wonderful opportunities to learn from some wonderful people. And he was one of them. He was a champion weightlifter back in the 50s and 60s, considered one of the best in the world. He was Japanese-American, actually got his start in weightlifting in an internment camp, in a World War II internment camp. So when I met him, he was in his late 70s, and I got to know him for the final 10 years of his life. And he was from Sacramento, but he lived in Hawaii. And I was the exact opposite. I'm from Hawaii, but I at the time lived in Sacramento. And he would come to Sacramento once a year. And I got the opportunity that every time he came to Sacramento to sit at his feet and just take in the knowledge. There's one thing very important. You don't have to know Tommy Kono. You don't have to look him up. You don't have to know anything about him, although you should. But there's one thing that I'm going to recommend that you take away from him like I did. And it was a simple thing. And it almost sounds like a cliche, but it has a lot of layers to it. And that is he would constantly remind me, practice makes permanent. And this is very important for two things. First of all, you have to ask, what do you want to make permanent? Which is a big question, because that's asking you, what is your value system? And we're going to go into that a little bit. We're going to start asking ourselves questions to find what our value system is. The second part of this is, therefore, what are you practicing? Does your practice actually reflect your value system? And this is where we get stumped a lot. This is actually where we get duped a bit, because when we invest in things, we can embrace our cognitive dissonance to the point where we actually are doing things counter to our value system, contradicting our value system. And so we're going to hopefully today look at what do we value and are we practicing stuff in relationship to that. Now, how we're going to look at this is, first of all, look at, just ask yourself, what are some things that you value? So I'm going to give you mine. This is my list, and you might see some similarities, but of course you're going to have your own. This is, by the way, permanent homework. This is the kind of stuff we need to ask ourselves regularly. And so my list consists of a bunch of stuff, of course, as does yours. But a few things I can think of right off the bat are respect, free thought, big fan of free thought, creativity, and love. Now, these four things, just right off the bat, now there's much more, but these are four that we can easily look at. My training, does my training reflect these four things? So if your list is similar, look at your movement practice, your training, and ask yourself, is it reflecting that list? Now, if my training is abusive, for instance, if I'm going into the gym and beating the crap out of myself, then I have to ask myself, am I being respectful? Am I being loving? Answer is probably no. Is my training redundant? Am I not present? Am I just being distracted by my training? Then the free thought and the creativity aren't being respected or appreciated. And so my value system is not being honored by my training. Another one would be, is your training somebody else's system? And this is a big one, especially now. Everybody's being sold somebody else's system. It's prefabricated thought that somebody else did. Now, if I respect free thought, then why would I be using somebody else's system? So nothing wrong with taking from other people's systems. In fact, look around, like what Bruce Lee used to say, take what works, discard what doesn't. But our fitness industrial complex is now a series of categories, right? You have these categories of movement. You have your yoga, CrossFit, powerlifting. You got to do your mobility. You also got to do your strength training, and you also got to do your cardio. These are all categories and labels, and they're all more limiting than they are freeing. And so we have to take from these and make our own journey. And so that's why it's important to look at your value system. What are you making permanent? Because practice makes permanent. And what are you practicing? Is your practice reflecting that value system? So we're going to do just a little exercise right now, just for fun. And I want you to join me if you can typey or it, you know, it'd be fun too. You want to write out on big cards and hold it up on your screen. That's fine too. But what I want you to do is define a word with me. It's a word that's used all the time in the fitness industry and in life. And yet we don't define it enough. The word is strength. Now, we're not going to do the physical definition of strength. That's easy to do. You can look in any book and it says the body's ability to generate force. But we don't use the word that often in that capacity. Often we talk about strength as something metaphysical, beyond physical. What does strength mean? If you were to talk about strength of character or a strong bond between friends, there's a lot of ways we use the word. So when you envision strength, if strength were part of your value system, what does it actually mean? And here's a way to answer that question. You ask the question, why is strength important? And as soon as you start answering that question, why is strength important? You have your definition. And so I'm going to let you do that. Ask yourself, why is strength important? You probably have a definition of what it is. There's a picture that I have that hopefully my host will put up that I love that represents strength to me. It's a woman who is standing up to a Nazi rally. This is somewhere in Europe. This is about 4 or 5 years ago. And I just love this picture. It's a woman who just stood up to a Nazi rally. She just went out in the middle of the street, put her fist up and said, boom, I do not support this and I'm against it. Now that to me is strength. Does it have anything to do with what you can do in the gym? I'll let you decide. But that's probably not what or a lot of people's training represents. So hopefully that's what strength might look like to you, or you have your own version. So please go ahead. And if you want to type a little bit or show a little bit of what strength means, I'd love to see it right now, because I'll make a little list and then we can talk about it. So I'm going to start the list with, I'll use this picture and then we can go from there. I'm just going to use the word courage. Maybe strength is courage. I'm writing it down right here. So what else do you have? I'd love to see more. Tenacity. Love that. Tenacity. It's a great word, isn't it? Tenacity. Determination. You're seeing something here. You're seeing a pattern. Determination. These are all great. Resolve. Loving this list. Good job, everyone. How about one more? Who else has one? Oh, I'm being waved at from across the room. Yeah, okay. So, the capacity to follow through. You know what? I'm going to shorten that because I love that. The capacity to follow through. I'm going to use the word capacity and maybe change it just a little bit to ability. Reliance, there's a good one. Now I'm going to sum up this list by using the word ability, because courage is the ability of all these things. We have courage, tenacity, strength is the ability of all these things. Courage, tenacity, determination, resolve, reliance. Those are wonderful. If those are your definitions of strength, then we have a question to ask. Are you training for that? Does your training reflect that? All right. By the way, look up the history behind this picture. We'll remove it now, but you know, it's kind of a cool picture. You'd much rather see me, I'm sure, because anyway, if these are the definitions of strength, if we have come up with this list, and it's a beautiful list, then we have to look at our practice. If that's what we want to make permanent, if I'm a strength trainer, which I am, I train people for strength, then I need for them to come up with a list. I would love to, I love that. Nice job, Beatrice. Capacity to rise and or fall and rise again. If I were to train someone, let's take that. If I were to train someone, that's their definition of strength. By the way, whenever I do work with somebody, I ask them this question. I want them to define strength. It's not my idea that I'm trying to push on them. I want them to get stronger at their own idea of strength. And so if we were to have this list, if you were to have this own personal list, then you look at your training for it. If I'm to train to be strong, how do I do that? How on earth do I train for those things? And this is where I start having to figure out, and this, it's going to be your job now too, what's the physical version of those things? Like, how do I train the physical version to create those skills, which is the next word we're going to talk about, skills. Everything on that list was a skill. And strength is the ability to handle, to create those skills, to have those skills. Strength training, physically as well as mentally, should be about skills. If your strength training is a redundant hodgepodge of body parts, you have to ask yourself, am I training for skill or am I just training body parts? So I had to figure out for me, and I want you to do the same too, and this took me a while. I'm not expecting anyone to do this today. But figure out what's the foundation of skills, physical skills, that I would need to support my value system. And I came up with it. And this took me years, actually. And my list changed over time. And this happened from working with people who were fresh off the couch, brand new people to a movement journey, to advanced level international athletes. I've run the spectrum and I've discovered something about all of those people, that entire spectrum. They all sort of need the same things on a base level. We all need the same foundation of movement, at least through my eyes. And your goal is to look through your eyes, of course. What do you need? And so my idea of skill was to figure out what the skills are and grow on them. And I'm not going to give you all of them now, but I'll give you some ideas. Like, for instance, I think we should all have the skill of being able to get up and down. whether it's from the ground, whether it's from a chair, whether it's up onto something. I call that the skill. It's a category I call rise. And rise just means being able to get up and down from things or onto things. Another one might be carry stuff. We need the skill to carry stuff. Now, I'm a strength competitor in multiple sports, and one of them is strongman competition. You've seen the strongman competitions. And yeah, I know, I don't look like it at all. I'm the skinniest and oldest in every competition I go to. But if you see strongman competitions, it's part of it is usually someone picking something up and moving it somewhere else, sometimes multiple objects. And that I find to be actually very important. It sounds simple as heck, right? Being able to just carry stuff. And yet there's so many versions of it, and it comes into play so often, and the ability to carry really heavy stuff has such an effect on our body, positive effect on our body, that that became a basic skill. Can everyone I work with be able to carry something basic? And as we get better at it, we can carry different things, different ways, different weights, et cetera. But I want everybody to be able to carry something. So I want everybody to be able to get up. I want everybody to be able to carry something. And then there's more. There's a list that goes on. There's only six basic categories. Those are our foundation skills. I'll let you come up with what you think over time. And don't worry about it so much today, but think about it. What are the basic skills? Because you might find that some stuff that's done in the gym might not be helping those skills in any way, shape, or form. And so I want to make sure that my people are learning, that my tribe are learning those basic skills. Then, and here's the point behind the skills, then they can choose where they want to go and what they want to do. Because if you have a basic understanding of movement, foundation movement, then you can pick where you want to go. If something looks interesting, explore. One of my values is curiosity. And I like working with people who have curiosity. Now, I also work with a lot of athletes who are very linear. They've got one goal. They want to get to be the best they can at this one thing. Even with them, I have to make sure they have the other skills coming up as well. Because there's one tenet that I go by. Better choices now mean more choices later. The beauty of that is the inverse of that is true too. If you're making poorer choices now, you're limited in your choices later. And so if I have an athlete that wants to do one thing, awesome, let's support that. But let's also make sure they have a basic understanding of the rest of the movement skills as well. Because I want them to have more choices later. And so figure out what's going to give you that foundation that you can build upon that'll give you the most choices over time. And how will that reflect your value system? Again, I'm curious. Curiosity is a big one for me. Exploration, which falls under curiosity, is a big one for me. I like to compete in strength sports, but that gives me simply some basic foundation strength to go be able to do stuff. What you do in the gym is not your entire movement practice. What you do in the gym is simply getting you better at basic movement to go have a movement practice. And if your foundation of skills is growing, then you have a lot more opportunity. Better choices now means more choices later. So skills, physical skills, your big homework now is to figure out what are the basic physical skills that you think are important. I'll throw a couple ideas out, take them or leave them. One is, as I mentioned, being able to get up and down. You might be surprised if you haven't worked with a lot of athletes, or you don't know a lot of people, movement people in the world, or you haven't worked with a lot of beginners, you may be surprised at how tough it is for people to get up and down from the ground. Even some high-level athletes I know who are very good at doing something from a standing position might not have the ability to get up and down from the ground. So I think that's a pretty basic skill. In fact, that brings me to a big point of how I came to embrace some of these skills. And that was, you look at children. How do children move? Now, granted, I grew up in the 70s, and I think growing up in the 70s gave me an understanding of movement that's very different from children growing up today. Because today, I see a lot of children twiddling their thumbs, literally. They got their phones and they're looking down a lot. So I'm not sure how children are exposed to movement as much as they were back when I was growing up. But I'm hoping that we still have the opportunity as children to explore and see the world as this great big magical place. And our goal is to just see how we fit in that, go crazy in it. Now, to do that, that's where a lot of my skills came from. I want to be able to get up from the ground. I want to be able to play on the ground. And I want to be able to move and carry things and move things. And so my skill base was based on that childish, almost childish movements. Those really reflect my value system. So I'm hoping that right now your brain is thinking, what is my value system? Am I moving to reflect that value system in as broad as I can? So with that in mind, I would like to take it back to my original South Park reference, for those of you who were here at the beginning. I like to connect with the deepest of literature, and therefore South Park was my reference point. And what we're going to do is look at step number two. So remember, step number one was workout. Step number three was a better you, and no one talks about step number two. So what is step number two? How do we take our movement practice, our training, and turn it into a better version of ourselves? One thing I'm going to mention here is that our body has one job, and that job is to move. All the systems of the body, the processing unit, the exhaust system, the wires and bits that hold it together, and everything about this system is so this can move. And so if you had one job and just one job, if you were completely allowed to do just one job, I'm going to guess that you'd want to do that job well, first of all, and you'd want to do it in as many ways as possible. So one of my little guidelines for life is move in many ways for many reasons. With that in mind, we can start looking at how we connect with our body. So let's look at, just ask yourself how you want to move. Are there many ways you want to move? And then ask yourself why it's important. Remember the question about strength. So we're going to go back to that question of strength. And then my camera's counting down, so we'll see what that means. And I might have to click it on in a second. Hey, hold on. I'll be back. I'm here. My camera does interesting things. So to fill in this gap, this question, this number two, how do you want to move and what does it mean? Now, if we do have this body that has one job, it just wants to move, then we'd better have a pretty good relationship with it. And I'd like to think that all of training is to build that relationship with it. And unfortunately, what we're seeing a lot in the fitness world, again, I call it the fitness industrial complex for a reason, is more of a distraction from our bodies or an abusive relationship with our bodies, things that don't actually connect probably with your value system, or something, again, somebody else's thought about how your body should move and what your body should do. So I'm going to suggest that we take a look at our relationship with our body and start using that number two, that step number two, to question that relationship with our body, because that's where it needs to get better. Does our training create a better relationship with our body? Because that'll make a better version of us, which is number three, step number three. So I have a couple thoughts about that, and I'll throw them out to you now. This is document. I do have a book. You know, I'm the world's worst marketer, by the way, so I don't really plug what I do too often, but I do have a book called Are You Useful? And it's along these lines, and a lot of what I'm talking about now is directly from the book. I might even put a link to it, but I didn't set up a link for this. Anyway, they might throw a picture up of my book in a second. But what my book talks about towards the end, especially, is this step number two. And so here's my ideas of what the step number two can be. And again, the long-term goals for you to process your own idea. The step number two, there's my book, Are You Useful? And I'll talk about the history of that book in a second. Step number two for me is, one, be present. When you're doing your movement practice, when you're actually performing your training, remember, your training is to get you better at your skills. To actually get better at those skills, you better be present. The other thing is to, and this one's a big one, turn judgment into observation. This was a trick that I learned from, this sounds about as out there and California as you can get. I learned this from a Buddhist monk. It's true, I just happened to go to a workshop he taught. It's not like I studied up in the Himalayas for any length of time. This Buddhist monk was giving me this idea. It was a meditation workshop, and he talked about the idea of turning judgment into observation. In fact, it's a basic concept of a lot of meditation practices, because every thought that comes into our head usually starts to manifest as a judgment. And so it would behoove us to just turn it into an observation instead. I'll give an example, and hopefully this will make sense. I come from a strength athletics background. I like to move heavy objects. Let's say I go up to a big heavy thing and I try to move it. I try to lift it. Maybe it's a stone. And I go to lift a big stone. This is what we do in some of my competitions. You go to pick up that big stone and your brain instantly judges it as heavy. That stone is heavy. Now, the difference between that judgment and just an observation of it being heavy is that your body will react to a judgment. A judgment will make your body stop and go, oh, that's probably bad. We need to react to that. And that reaction will probably not be positive. It'll probably stiffen up or not be able to lift it. And stuff will happen in your central nervous system that'll stop the process of you lifting it because you judged it as heavy. And your brain gave that judgment to the body and the body reacted accordingly. But if the brain just shut the heck up and just observed heavy, heavy's not a bad thing. Heavy's just an observation. Then the body wouldn't care less. The body will just keep going on its task and the body will lift the stone. The body will move that object. So if you can apply that to day-to-day life, when things come into your head, as soon as it's a judgment, we're going to hold on to them and react to it, whatever that thought is. And that's probably going to get in the way of creating a progression to go to the next step, to go where we need to go. I'm going to suggest turning the judgments into observations. And so that's a big step for creating a movement practice that is actually creating a better relationship with your body. So let's see, that was step number two. Number three would be find joy and appreciation in your training. One thing, from years and years of competing, teaching competitors and teaching beginners and just working in this movement and strength industry, one thing I've noticed, you don't see a lot of people smiling during their workouts. Not a lot of smiles. In fact, one of my favorites was I was hanging out at the end of a marathon. Now, I didn't run the marathon, but some people I knew were running the marathon. I was at the end of the marathon with a friend waiting. And the friend turned to me and said, nobody looks happy. They might smile when they cross the finish line, but during the rest of it, they look miserable. And I realized that that's the common gym thing seems to be look miserable. Go into a gym and watch everybody there. Most people are looking pretty miserable. They're not finding their joy or appreciation in the moment. They always wait to the end. You hear about that. I feel so great afterwards. Well, what about during that movement? There's something wonderful about appreciating what you can do in the moment. So even if I'm picking up that big, heavy stone, it might be a little painful. It might be straining my body. It might be tough to do. It might be challenging. Love the challenge. Why don't we love the challenge? I think how we grow as individuals is through a series of challenge. All change that happens to us comes from challenge. And in intellectual pursuits, we usually love that challenge. We read, we study, we think. Those are all challenges. Believe it or not, thinking can be a challenge. We've seen that a lot recently in political stuff. Anyway, So if we can embrace those challenges, which we have, we embrace learning, we embrace pursuing knowledge, pursuing the capacity to do and create, we always find joy and appreciation from that. Why can't we do that in our training? So let's say I'm picking up something really heavy. I'm moving something. I'm doing something very strenuous. Why can't I smile during that? Look at what I can do, I say to my body, and I invite you to do the same. While you're doing something challenging, put a smile on your face and celebrate what you're able to do in that moment. Then we can find joy and appreciation for what our body can do. Not just the after effect. That after effect is great. When you're all done with your workout and you think, wow, I feel great now. It's like you beat yourself up and survived. Why not instead also find the joy and appreciation in the moment by celebrating what you can do while you're doing it? So those three things, being present, turning observation into judgment, and finding joy and appreciation in the moment, those three things, I think, can channel us into a greater understanding with our body, the greater relationship with our body. So our workout, step number one, workout, can lead to step number three, a better us, because we now have a step number two. The problem is that's really hard to sell. You can't really sell that at a gym. So the fitness industrial complex probably isn't gonna sell you a version of that. They're just going to tell you that it happens, but it doesn't happen. It doesn't automatically happen. So those are my versions of what that step number two is. You might have some of your own. So first of all, we define strength. That's, again, permanent homework. That's stuff we're going to do the rest of our lives. Your definition of what strength truly means might always evolve and grow, and that's beautiful. And remember to ask the question, why is it important to me? Because that's what your definition is. So we once we do that, we define strength, we figure out what our values are, define your value system. Then you look at your training. Is it actually building, reflecting, and evolving those things, your value system and what strength truly is? And then look at, how does this affect the rest of my life? That's the step number two I was talking about from my South Park reference. By the way, it's a very old episode. If you don't watch South Park, good for you. If you do watch South Park, you're gonna have to go back to look the early 90s for this episode, but it's a classic. With all that in mind, I've given you my ideas of how to start pursuing a movement philosophy. One little thing I wanna talk about is the difference between your movement practice and your training. Now, your training is part of your movement practice, but I'm hoping it's not all of your movement practice. If your movement is simply what you do at the gym, then you are actually probably missing out on the purpose of the training. I'm hoping your training can simply give you those skills to go have a movement practice. So have a daily movement practice, but it doesn't mean you need to train daily. One final story I'm going to tell about how we use words and how this can affect us. We love to consider how society has given us the idea that all of our movement should somehow be a workout. And you'll hear this a lot. Like, let's say you go on a hike and you talk about the hike. Someone that will inevitably say, oh yeah, I heard that hike's a great workout. Or you take a new dance class. Someone will probably say, oh yeah, I heard that's a great workout. I'll give you an example. I was in the ER with a friend of mine, and she was on a roller derby team. And we were in the ER because she got a concussion playing roller derby. Because she was a jammer. If you know anything about roller derby, jammers tend to be smaller. They often slam into large objects called blockers, which are women that are sometimes twice the jammer's size. And that can cause you to, well, concuss. So anyway, we're in the ER and the nurse asks about what happened. And we tell the story, roller derby. And the nurse says, oh, roller derby, I heard that's a great workout. You don't get a concussion from a workout. you get a concussion because you followed some passion and you were very excited about a movement exploration that you just went for. That's not a workout. But our culture loves to try to put it into those words that everything we do movement-wise has to be a workout. And so I want us to think that workouts should be part of our training to make us better, to then go have a movement practice. So it can be part of our movement practice, but it's not all of the movement practice. And so feel free to move daily, little bit of movement every day, train to get better at those movements. Sometimes the movement can just be, dare I say, for fun. In fact, I'm gonna say the majority of your movement should be for fun. Remember, joy and appreciation. So look at your value system. Are you moving to support that value system? Because I guarantee when this unit here, which has that one job, remember that one job of this is to move, when you let it and when you teach it to do it better, your relationship with your body is going to be, better. But here's the important part. I believe, from what I've seen, our relationship with our body is very similar, if not directly correlated, with our other relationships. How you take care of this and relate to this is how you probably relate to a lot of other things in life, if not everything. Is it abusive? Is it disconnected? Take a look at it. So with that in mind, I would love to hear if you have any questions or observations about your relationship with your body. So I'm just going to open this up to Q&A, if that's okay with my hosts. Hopefully you guys have your water. Drink, drink. It's important for you.
For now, we have more like people commenting than questions, really. So go on, whoever wants to ask specific questions.
Yes, feel free. If you have anything to say, let me know.
I guess it's really moving the way of thinking and the way of looking at the things. So we are more like receiving.
Yeah, you let it sit.
Philosophy into the practice, really.
Let it simmer for a while. Mm-hmm. And feel free, by the way, I should mention this, because this is what happens when I teach workshops a lot, is I present some information, people are going to think about it, and the questions come later. So again, feel free to reach out to me via any of my other social media, which they'll show you, I'm sure. Body Tribe Chip on Instagram or Facebook. And let me know if you have questions in the future. I keep dialogues with lots of people all around the world regularly.
Chip, I do have a question. Yes. if you do go through that assessment and go, whatever I'm doing is not serving me, there is a sense of regret. It's like, well, I just spent 6 years training on blah. Yeah. How'd you get over that?
Well, you bring up a very important point. We are creatures of investment. One human condition is that we invest into things. And I'm not just talking money, but time and energy. And whenever we invest in anything, there's this system in our brain that says, well, then we have to believe that it is the thing that works for us. And unfortunately, that will get in the way of truth a lot of times. And it's really tough. It's really hard to step back and go, wow, I just put all this stuff into something and it might not be the best thing for me. How do we change that? If we look at what it was that we invested in, there's probably some of it that's very valuable. Hold on to that. I bet that might have supported your value system. But now, hopefully, we can get over the ego part of it and just start looking around and going, what else is out there that also supports it? Because it's a great big world. And that's, that's an important one. How do we step out of what we've been invested in for so long? Just take what worked. Take the good stuff that does support your value system. And you're allowed, this is important, allow yourself to discard the rest. And that's true with any relationship with anything, right? It's sometimes tough to discard the relationship. In this case, it's your relationship with whatever you put all that time and energy in. Good question.
Yes, we have a question from Becky who wants to understand if we could, how you would how you would train, how you would bring embodied compassion to be a strength, you could work in the gym.
So embodied compassion is an interesting term because it's almost redundant in that if you're embodied, you're probably going to be pretty compassionate. And if you have compassion, chances are you're probably already working on embodiment. So it's an interesting term that I think makes sense, but at the same time also is almost repeating itself. And if we can understand that our relationship with our body is why we are training, and if we are trainers, if you are a trainer and you want to work with other people, this is the tough one. Your big goal is to help them find their embodied compassion. You're not trying to lay your idea, your philosophy into them. Your goal is to help them create their own, which is why, you know, this workshop exists. I've been asked many, many times if I can teach a certification. Can I give you guys a certification? Or people wanted to buy my Body Tribe certification. That's them buying my thought. And I don't want them to buy my thought. The big goal is just to share my experience and hopefully everybody can come up with their own. So when working with a client, the big goal of working with that client is to begin their journey of coming up with their own philosophy, which hopefully the goal is, yeah, that embodied compassion. Take a look. Is that within their value system? I bet if you ask them, they'd say yes. And then your goal is to help them start figuring out what it is. And I can't give an easy answer for that. It's taken me quite some time to figure out what steps that might take because everybody's going to be a little different. But there are certain movements and movement practices that you can at least begin on where people start understanding their body and realizing, oh, look at what I can do. And when you start realizing what you can do, that right off the bat is a big impetus to explore that relationship with your body even further, if that makes sense. Not sure I answered that at all, but.
Yes, absolutely, you did. Yes, did you say training leads to workout leads? Wait, did you say training leads to workout, leads to movement practice? I'm not sure.
Right, so we got a lot of words bouncing around here and they all are related, but they're not all the same thing. So for instance, a movement practice is simply, how are we moving every single day? It can be workouts, but it doesn't have to be. And that's the big important part. We like to think as a society that all movement should be some sort of workout. It should be some sort of struggle, some sort of suffering. We like to equate suffering with reward. We're a culture that loves suffering because we think it brings a reward. And so our workouts have become these artistic versions of suffering because we think we're going to get a big reward. But in reality, movement doesn't have to be suffering. In fact, as I keep mentioning, movement should be a pursuit of joy. But we might want to build skills to be able to pursue more movement. And that's where the training comes in. Now, the training is a workout. Your training consists of workouts. That doesn't mean all workouts are training. There's a lot of workouts you'll see. You go to any gym or watch any workout program, and you're going to see a lot of people working out, but they're not training for anything. They're just going through the motions of, I don't know what their goal is, burning calories or whatever, but they're not building skills. They're not learning how to do anything better. They've just been told that that's important. So there's a lot of people working out that aren't training. A lot of workouts have nothing to do with training. So I'm just suggesting here that we work out as a training tool to get better at movement, to build those skills. So then we can expand and have a movement practice outside of our training and our workouts. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yes, so it means that actually you really bring, you go towards knowing yourself better in what you want in this movement, in this training. What do you want to build up? What kind of skills you want to build up for yourself and in which core values, right?
So yeah, exactly. And so your course mentioned, You mentioned core values.
Right. And so I'm coming back to your first statement, which how you link it with like practice makes permanent. Mm-hmm. So what practice you will build to become permanent, you will not call it a training exactly. How you will match these values into your practice, what you will choose as a practice at the end.
Those are the two biggies. If you look at what you want to be permanent, then you have to look at what you're practicing. Do they go together? I see a lot of stuff happening in the gym that actually isn't leading to anywhere. But we can sure believe it is because we talked about investment earlier. We've invested into it. So we have to sort of, we might get a little mad at ourselves by wondering, by seeing that what we're doing is not supporting our value system. We have to be able to let it go. Now, there's a caveat to that. If you're moving, if you're training, if you're working out and you find joy in it, I'll use an example. I know, going back to marathon running, I know a lot of people run marathons because they find joy in it. It doesn't have crossover to much anything else. And oftentimes it's more abusive than it is positive. And I can replace marathons with almost anything. You can replace marathons with powerlifting or even yoga sometimes. It can be abusive. It can be too much. It can be redundant. It can be counter beneficial to your value system. But if you're finding joy in it and it's not too detrimental to your system, then awesome. Maybe finding joy in movement is the first of your values. But then also take a look as to the rest of your value system. How are you supporting those as well? Like, I don't want to tell anybody to stop what they're doing if they're finding joy in it.
That's a wonderful one, value. Yes. There was a question about what exercise you would suggest to start with, or what movement. Oh, Joyce, you want to say something? Movement can be workout. You may need to work out to improve movement option. Oh, you were giving the, okay.
Just trying to summarize, see all the yeah. little interrelated steps. So trying my best to, but you should really just read the book, to be perfectly honest.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
it's chapter 27 in my book.
We speak about the giving this, you know, keeping the smile when we practice yoga, that oh, now in this difficult position, can you smile? But then you bring how much important is that philosophy in whatever we do and how we are with our bodies. So it's really enlightening. I mean, it's brilliant.
The one thing I'm not seeing enough in the training world is people finding joy in the moment, being able to express excitement for what their body can do at that moment. And I think that's a big part of it. Let's you know, when you're under, for me, let's say I'm under a big squat bar because I have to squat a lot of weight. Maybe I should just be excited at that moment that I can squat that much weight. And that turns the entire workout into something that's going to be a little more beneficial rather than just another session of suffering.
And Chip, in whatever you do, you bring these qualities in the different kinds, whether you're maybe at an outlet or whether you're outside in the nature, you feel that each time you go with this kind of intent and quality.
That's the goal. I call it a ritual. You know, instead of workouts, your training being a routine, I like to think of it as a ritual. And so part of me is trying to focus on that every time I do have a movement practice. In fact, I have a YouTube video series called Body Tribe Anywhere. I've been traveling for the last 3 or 4 months, and I've just been doing these workouts in interesting places around the country. And the goal is to not only explore me, but explore my surroundings. And so with the idea being, look, you don't need much. You just need you and your sense of curiosity, and you can train your value system.
How would you start people off with finding joy in movement?
How would I stop people finding joy?
Two directions, like how to get started with it.
Oh, how to get started? Go out
tomorrow morning from my door and I say, okay, I want to start to move and find joy in that movement. I don't know what I will do.
Yeah, that's tough. And so one of the things I've done over the years is created a step-by-step intro to movement. So when I work with somebody for the first time, I like to introduce them to movement in a playful way. One big thing, and this is important for trainers to know, We should teach movement before we teach exercise. They're not synonymous. All exercise is movement, not all movement is exercise. And so if we can teach movement first as something playful and fun, then maybe we can start exploring exercise from there. Oh, my camera's doing my countdown again. Hold on 1 second. I'm gonna do this, boop, and then this, boop. There we go.
All right. I guess we'll come to a wrap up. I really would encourage everyone to want to go deeper. We already dived today with Chip Conrad about this concept, and get the book. We've posted the link and the title of the book. And watch the videos, watch his, and you can get also, yes, on his website, but he's in build up. And he said you can connect on his Instagram. Now it's being posted, right? Now, I would thank you very much, Chip Conrad, for this wonderful session. I've been really enjoying and learning a lot. And I wish everyone to continue the last day of the conference and continue to enjoy. And more sessions and more learnings. If you would like to go back to the sessions and view other of this kind of thousand sessions we have for these 12 days, so you can purchase the library of the conference and watch it on your own pace and time and enjoy them. And that is on the portal. It's still at 50% till tonight. You can also have learning lists and build yourself with this, whatever you want to learn more, and you can connect on the channel, Anatomy channel, on the Facebook group as well, and on the coffee chats. And now, Chip Conrad, would you like to give us your number one embodiment tip? We collect every presenter number one tips.
I'll go back to the very beginning and mention that practice makes permanent. Look at what you're practicing, look at what you want to make permanent. Do they correlate with each other? That's it. That's as simple as I can make it, but I'd like to say thank you all for playing with me today. I really appreciate you being here. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. It was so great. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy and take care of yourself and your bodies. Mm-hmm.